Hello and welcome to Hacker Public Radio. I'll be your host for today. I'm Pokey. Joining me today, very graciously, is Andreas Born and George Vlahavis of the Salix OX OS project. For those who don't know, Salix is a derivative of Slackware, and it's been described as Slackware made easy or Slackware for lazy people. And as a guy who's lazy and likes things easy, I can confirm both of those. This is currently my favorite distro and has been for quite some time. I'm very excited about this interview. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Patrick.
That was Andreas. Good morning, George, also. Sorry, I shouldn't have just said both of you at once. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Patrick.
Okay, sorry, so you're George. And Andreas, good morning to you, too.
Good morning, Patrick.
Sometimes I get a little mixed up with screen names. So, yeah, would you guys like to explain to our audience who may not know, what is it that you guys do for Salix? What is Salix, first of all?
Maybe I'll start?
Yes.
Well, Salix, we started it as our own contribution to Slackware, actually. We wanted to create a Slackware derivative that would fit our personal interests and that we could use easily on our own computers, and our friends' computers. So we actually wanted to create a Slackware that was easier for us to install on our computers and our friends' computers. We all knew each other, the base team, we all knew each other before we actually started Salix from another project, from a different project. So we knew that we could work well together and start another project. And we actually knew a lot of how it was going to start, the technical details, how it was going to start. And it was actually very, not actually easy, but the path was laid in order to start Salix. Well, it's a Slackware-based distribution with many additional tools, with dependency resolution provided by default, and many extras. The packages that are available are about twice as many as in Slackware itself. So it is actually Slackware. There are not that many differences in technical terms in how the system works, but it has a lot of additional stuff.
If I remember correctly, it's 100% Slackware compatible, as in you can just use the tools that come with Slackware and the software distribution methods available to vanilla Slackware. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. Everything that works in Slackware also works in Salix. There's no difference at all. We actually use every Slackware package that is available in Slackware. It's also available in Salix, just exactly the same packages. So there are no differences at all. Anything you use in Slackware can be used in Salix. And the other way around, actually. Anything that is used in Salix can be used in Slackware. So that's another one of our goals. We could provide additional packages and help Slackware users in that way.
But in the past, we've also seen sometimes cases where users installed software provided by us and some other Slackware software wouldn't work correctly with that. But that's nothing that couldn't happen with a pure Slackware setup if you install that software we offer out of the box. So there can be some cases where it's not 100% compatible.
Okay, but that's not a repository incompatibility. That was just a software incompatibility that would have happened anyway, you said?
Yeah, it's more like that.
Okay, very neat. That's very cool. What was the project that you guys worked on before Salix? I'm a little curious about that. I hadn't heard of that.
You actually did. It's Zenwalk. We all the best team worked in Zenwalk before we started Salix.
Oh, wow. Okay, so all of you guys did Zenwalk, and then you moved over to Salix. That's really very cool. I don't think most people knew that. Yeah, I will say, as far as, you know, what you've said that Salix's goals were, as far as I'm concerned, you succeeded tremendously in this. It was very easy to install for me. I thought your installer was fantastic. It's very similar, I thought, to the Debian NCurses installer, but a little simpler, I'd say. There were less configuration options in there. And just what a beautiful desktop. Every wallpaper that comes with it is really pretty and nice looking, and all the themes are nice looking, and I enjoy using it all the time.
Yeah, thanks a lot. The installer actually tried to do something. We tried to take the Slackware installer and dump it down so it will be faster and easier to install the system. It actually looks a lot like the Slackware installer without the package selection option that is in Slackware, and a lot of stuff are really automated, and additional configurations, steps like user configuration that you have to do in Slackware after you actually install Slackware itself. All these are automated in our own installer. And about the artwork, yeah, we kind of pay a lot of attention to detail on that part. So I think we've succeeded in getting a lot of beautiful wallpapers in the distribution, yes.
How did you guys come up with the bonsai tree?
Well, there was some discussion in the forum, and at some point, I think somebody suggested the bonsai tree, and everybody liked it, so we went for it.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about what name to choose when we started Salix. We were working on Salix for months before we even had a name or a logo to display. So there was a lot of talk on what name to choose. A lot of crazy suggestions were made, but in the end we all agreed to use Salix as a name. And Salix being also a genus of a tree, of a willow tree, we thought that we could have a tree as a logo. So we thought about maybe a small bonsai willow. And we found that there exist bonsai willows actually exist and look a bit like that. So we kind of picked that up then at that point. And we all agreed that it was nice and beautiful, and we liked it.
You also should know that originally our code name when the project started was Alcoholics, because one of the core devs, Thorsten, was hosting on the same server wiki about alcoholic beverages, so he gave the project that code name, and you can still see some traces of that name somewhere.
That's really funny. That's fantastic. I'm really glad you brought that up about the name, because one of my favorite things about, you know, Linux and open source and free software is the names that people come up with, because there's almost always a good story behind the name of stuff, and that's a good story. I'm glad you brought it up. Getting back to the installer, I think one of the things about your installer that's really genius is that it's broken up into categories, and you select whichever category you'd like in whatever order you'd like, and as it's finished, it gives you a check mark to let you know that it's been done. I didn't quite notice at first that that's what was going on, but as soon as I figured that out, it really clicked as what I thought was the right way to do an installer. I really liked that. Is that what the standard Slackware installer is like? Because I don't remember it that way.
Are you talking about the live installer now?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, the graphical one.
Yes, the graphical installer, I'm sorry.
Okay, because that's we have two different installers. The one is the standard installer, the Encursys installer that's in the standard installation CDs, and then we have the live CDs, and there's a live installer there that has a GUI that's written in GDK. You're talking about the second one now. Actually, that is PureX work. And one of the goals that Pierrick had when he was writing the installer, which is written in Python, PyGDK, by the way, one of the goals that he had was to for the user to be able to finish up any installation task in any order that he wanted to. For example, if someone wanted to set up users first and then move up to partitioning, he could do it that way. Or if you wanted to do it the other way around, that would be no problem. So when you complete a task in the installer, you get a checkbox that it's okay, you finish that, you can move on to any other task with not a specific order. It gives a lot of freedom to the user that is installing, and he can install it. He can go through the tasks in any order he likes. It's not like a typical installer where you just press next, 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 and everything is laid out in order. You can do everything in the order that you like to do it.
Yeah, I found it really enjoyable to go through it that way. It was pretty unique. I don't remember another distro doing it that way. One question I do have about installation that kind of puzzled me a little. You have three different levels of package installation. So you can choose, if memory serves correctly, you can choose a full installation with all of the recommended software, a minimal installation, which just comes with Firefox and your package manager, and you can do a, what was it, a command line only or X only? I forget what the third one was.
It was a command line.
Yes. Well, I think the idea was the installation system was to kind of move all the configuration and additional setup from the installation stage, where you don't have a full environment yet, to the actual system, which is already set up. So it gets easier and you have full power, and the different installation levels, the options, core, full, basic, just offer you a way to easily choose a level of pre-configuration so you can set up your system afterwards as you like. Somebody who wants to set up his own special system with his own desktop environment, or who wants to set up a server, could just choose the core option, whereas some user who wants to just get going and doesn't want to mess with all the application selection and stuff could just choose the full option. And basic is just the middle thing.
I thought that was pretty clever, but I did try at one point to do the basic installation, and I found it was a little over my head at the time because it didn't come with a network manager that I could see. And I had a hard, I mean, I'm sure I probably could have done it from the command line, but I'm not quite that adept at Linux, so it was and nothing I could Google for at the time because I didn't have my network up. Was that intentional so that someone could pick between Wicked and Network Manager or whatever the KDE one is? I forget the name of it. Was that intentional there?
Yes, it was there because there's not only Wicked or KDE. Slackware also offers its own startup scripts for setting up networks, so some users may prefer those. For example, I'm using them on my desktop because I don't need a network manager there, and it just takes additional time to set up the network.
Well, yeah, a full installation is what is suggested to most people. It's the easiest way to get started, as Andreas already said. The basic installation that you tried is actually aimed at more advanced users that know a little bit of how to use their Salix or Slackware installation. Actually, when you do a basic or a core mode installation, you get a network setup window
So, I think what Gavin was trying to say is that during the setup, during the installation, you get a window asking you for network setup, but I think when you're using the graphical installer, that option might be missing. I think the point had been already made at some point, but with the live CD, with the installer CD, I'm pretty sure there is such an option.
Yes, with the standard installation, when you do a basic, that's what I was trying to say, and sorry for the interruption, with the standard installation, when you select a basic or a core installation mode, you get a window at the end of the installation that you can use to configure your wired network connection. As there are no wireless tools at all or drivers in a basic installation mode, it doesn't make any sense to have a wireless connection manager in a basic installation. A user that select a basic installation will have to select to install their own wireless drivers and software on their own, but they can already use a wired connection using the standard Slackware tool NetConfig from a root terminal. From a live installation, I'm not that sure. I think you don't get the prompt. So what you actually get is a computer with no initial network connection. All you had to do was to run netconfig from a root terminal and it would be set up. So, but you would need to know that beforehand. So yeah, that was a bit tricky. I agree.
Oh, okay. That might be where I had my trouble. When I first tried Salix, I was confined to bed rest. I had just had a surgery, and someone very generously gave me a laptop, and it was older hardware, and I could not get any other distro to run on that laptop. Even Slackware wouldn't run because KDE was so heavy. And I had seen Salix, and I had been curious about it, and I thought, okay, well, we'll give this a try. So I had already, you know, I pulled the CD out of my CD wallet, and I popped it in, and it ran beautifully on this old hardware. But the network thing had me puzzled, and I was stuck in the chair, so I couldn't have plugged it in. That's probably what that was all about. So, all right, now I understand. But that's good to know for anyone coming to it, that it's not going to come with the wireless drivers.
Yeah, the basic installation mode is actually a very basic graphical system. So one that you can use to install in any type of computer. And actually, people that install Celix on their desktops do not need any wireless drivers usually. So why should we install all that software for them without them needing it? It's aimed at more advanced users that know a little bit, they know their way around in Celix, so if they need anything more, they should know how to install it by themselves. It provides a very basic system, as you said, only a browser and the package manager, so anyone can install their own selection of software after actually installing the base system.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense now. I hadn't thought about it that way. Well, since you brought up your package manager, can we talk about that for a bit? How did the package manager come about?
Well, we're lucky enough that GSLAP, the SlapGet, its command line basis, was already available before we started Celix, and it was already used in a couple of more Slapware-based distributions. And I have to say that SlapGet is excellent. I think it's perfect for Celix, and we were lucky that it already existed and was at that level of quality before we started Celix. It has a lot of features that we wanted to have, and no other package manager that exists for Slapware, the ability to have multiple repositories set up at the same time, like we do now in the default installation of Celix. So you would have access to a standard Slackware repository, and offers you all the packages that are available in Slackware, and then you have an additional repository on top of that is the Celix repository with additional software. And the only package manager that could do that was actually SlapGet and GSLAP. And I think that's it. We were very lucky to have that before we started Celix. We couldn't have set up Celix in this way that it is today without SlapGet or GSLAP.
Yeah, I've used both, and SlapGet is easy to use. It's very user friendly, and GSLAP is also very, very pretty, very easy to discover what you need to get done, and just it's easy to use. I like how quickly it updates. It's very, very nice. So with the newest version of Celix, 1.3.37, because you guys follow the release number for Slackware, with the latest one you have Sorcery, is it called? Can you talk about that for a little bit?
Well, actually, that's my work, so I'll probably talk more than Andreas by that.
Oh, cool.
The developer of SlapGet and GSLAP also wrote a tool, SlapSRC. That one was used to install packages from source, packages from slackbuilds.org. It's another Slackware-oriented repository with source packages, though, and you have to download the source files and the build scripts from that repository and build the software yourself. It's not that difficult, but I agree, Kathy, it might be a bit difficult for a beginner, for a Slackware beginner, and we wanted a way to automate that. And well, he created SlapSRC to automate downloading and building and installing software from slackbuilds.org. And it's a huge repository of software, slackbuilds.org. It has more than 3,000 packages available. But you have to install them manually. You have to build them yourself. So SlapSRC only had a command line interface. It was only a command line tool. And I wanted to have a graphical tool, a graphical front end to it, just like GSLAP is a graphical front end to SlapGet. So I talked a little bit with SlapSRC's developer, Jason, and Jason didn't actually have any plans to make a graphical front end for SlapSRC. So I thought I'll just start making one. and offer that to our users. Because actually, I felt that Slapped SRC was not really that obvious. People who installed Salix 13.1, most people weren't actually aware that it was that such a tool existed in 13.1. Slapped SRC was also available there, but most people will not see it, as there was no graphical tool to see. They had to know that it was there to use it from command line. So I thought that we should have a graphical front end and started writing Sorcery. And it's actually a front end to Slapped SRC in the same manner that G-Slapped is a front end to SlapGet. It has a few more capabilities though. One very useful thing that Sorcery has is that you can read the descriptions and the instructions on how to build and what is needed for its package from inside the Sorcery's graphical interface. Well, in order to do the same thing with SlapSRC, you have to go to the slapgills.org website yourself and view the pages there, and you needed to take more steps to complete the same task. So yes, it is a front end to SlapSRC, makes it more visible to users, makes SlapSRC more visible to users. It has a couple of more things on top of that. But I think what and actually adds a lot of software to Slapped SRC, and Sorceries add a lot of software to the collection of packages that are available in Salix. You're not restricted to the packages that we have rebuilt in the in our SlapGet repositories. You have a lot of software that's available on top of that, and you actually, and I don't think any user will find anything missing. Anything the user wants, he can get exactly what he wants, or maybe something similar that will do the same task, either from our binary repositories or from slackbuilds.org using Slack SRC or Sorcery. So I think it covers a lot of the software needs that people usually want and need.
Very cool. Is that also written in Python?
Yes, exactly. The front end is written in Python by GDK.
Cool. Is the source code for that available for people who wanted to study that?
Yes, everything. All our source code is available, actually. We have an SVN repository that has all the code that we write specifically for Salix, and it's a lot of code, actually, for one distribution. We have a lot of home-built tools that we use, or our system tools are tools that we created from scratch as Sorcery. The same thing stands for our system tools, our time configuration tools, user configuration tool, services configuration tool, and all that. All those were written from scratch. And all the source code is available from our SVN repository, and we also have a source code repository for our binary packages. In our binary packages repository, there is a source directory in there, along with the Salix directory that points to the source code of every package there is available in our repository. So you can get the source code either way, either from the source directory in our binary packages repositories, or from SVN if you do detect the latest code available.
Beautiful. And because I'm a bit of a license geek, are those released under GPL, or is it a Berkeley-type license, or what's the license there?
Most things are in GPL version 3. There are a few stuff, little stuff, there are in different licenses. I know that Fred, another developer, uses the do what the fuck you want to license. It's a little bit funny, his name, a lot of times, but most stuff are in GPL V3.
Okay, fantastic. Now, when you say that Sorcery builds the package for you, does that download binary pieces and put them together in the right way, or is it downloading source code and compiling it and then packaging it?
It's doing the latter. So it downloads the source code, and there's a script which has all the instructions you would do on the command line, and runs all that stuff and builds the package and puts it into some directory and puts it into an archive and installs that archive like a normal package.
Okay, cool. So it's actually doing code compilation. Is any of that tuned to your specific system, or is everybody going to get the same binary output no matter what processor and system they're using?
The way that it is set up by default, packages are built with specific flags, C flags. But every user can customize that, and he can add the flags for his own processor and build the any package with optimizations for his own system.
So you can change that within Sorcery, or you mean if you were to compile manually?
No, you don't change it from within Sorcery. You only have, it's not that obvious, but you have to change an environment variable, the CFlags variable. If you set the CFlags variable in your bash profile, it will work through Sorcery, and it will build all software using those CFlags.
Oh, okay, I see. That's very clever. That's good to know. Great. So what are some of you guys' favorite bits of Salix OS? What's your favorite thing about using it or about working on it? Andreas, how about you?
Well, it's great. I think I've started, there were applications, quite some applications I like using, and I use a lot, which were not there, and I just took the chance and could do the applications for me and could also provide them to others and share that work. So I have the Salix. With Salix, it's very easy to contribute, and contributors are very welcome. There's not a high level of entry for contributors like with some other projects.
Yeah, the main advantage I see in Salix is that it's very simple to grasp. That, of course, is attributed Slackware, which is a very simple system. And you can actually learn how the entire system works with very little effort. And you can understand how every little nut and bolt works inside the distribution very, very easily compared to other distributions. And what Andrea said, of course, that it's very easy to contribute to Salix. It's very easy to create Slackware packages, actually, compared to creating RPM or dev packages for other distributions. For example, Slackware packages and, of course, Salix packages, which are exactly the same, are very basic tarballs, actually. There's nothing special about those. They're actually very basic tarballs with files ordered in a specific way. So it's very, very easy to create your own packages, to roll your own packages in Salix and Slackware than it is with other distributions. And the simplicity of the system is what I love most. And it's very easy to tweak it and set it up the way that you want to and install whatever you want to, even if something is not provided by default by your own distribution. Maybe we're not providing the latest version of LibreOffice, for example. But it's very easy for any user to go on and install the latest version for himself if he knows just a little bit more than using the package manager. It's very easy to tweak our package build scripts and build the newer version and install that and use that instead of the version that is provided by the repositories. That stands for every piece of software, actually, that is available in Slackware and Salix. You can update them and you can go wild and do whatever you want with the package manager. Nothing is restricting you. There are no dependency issues that you need to be worried about. Even with Salix, when we have dependency resolution, automatic dependency resolution, actually the system is exactly the same as a basic Slackware system. You don't have to worry about dependencies that much. You won't ever get into dependency hell with Slackware or Salix. Even if Salix has automatic dependency resolution, that's a very fine layer that is laid on top of the binary distribution, the binary packages, and you can very easily circumvent that. So it's a system that you can tweak a lot to your liking, and you can do anything you want with it. And it's very easy to maintain. It's very difficult actually to break a Slackware or a Salix system unless you do something really stupid like roots of the root directory or anything or something like that.
Yeah, I've been using Salix since probably April of last year, and I don't think I recall a single crash of any piece of software I've used in Salix, and I've installed quite a bit that doesn't come with it. So even if it's not the latest of all the packaging, that could be available through source code, it's very, very stable. And that's one of the things I've enjoyed about it the most, is that I find I don't even worry about system crashes or program crashes anymore. It's just, it doesn't happen. At least for me, anyway, and that's one of my favorite things about it. Now, when I first started using Salix, it was available with XFCE and I believe LMDE as desktops. It looks like you guys have a few more of those available now. How can people use it? What desktops are available to folks by default now?
Well, by now there are 5 editions. Just the XFCE and LXDE, not LXDM or what you were mentioning. That's LXDE.
Okay, sorry.
Fluxbox, no problem. And KDE, and a last one which Gavin did, or George did, that's Red Poison. And I think all those editions are also an example of the contributions. It were users who took the initiative there, and they were coming to us and wanted to do a new edition, and that's how basically all those new editions emerged. XFCE is what everything started with. It's kind of like the default edition. It's where we start releasing, and it's mostly George Child. And the other editions usually come afterwards when releasing, when the different persons maintaining them catch up. I have to say I'm mostly using the XFCE edition or my own custom OpenBox desktop, so I don't have to say so much about differences between the editions. I think George is more familiar with those.
Yeah, we started actually the only edition that we had in mind when we started making Salix was the XFCE one. When we were talking about how Salix is going to start, before we even had a name actually, we were talking about what desktop environment we should choose, and most of us actually were using XFCE as a default environment. That's what most of us wanted to use, so we ended up using XFCE in our first version, 13.0. After that, more people got involved in Salix. We had other contributors, as Andreas said, coming in Salix, and one by one we started adding more additions. Demetrius Game, another Greek developer, that he was actually working on another Slackware-based distribution before he came to Salix. And he's actually developing it along with Salix right now. And he liked Salix when he found out that we existed. He liked what we did, and he liked KDE. So he offered to create a KDE edition, and we did. We offered a KDE edition additionally to our XFCE edition. And then more guys came and wanted to create a Fluxbox edition. Some Italian developers that we have in our team. And they loved Fluxbox, so we created a Fluxbox edition with them. And then Christian, another developer, came along, and he liked LXD, so we made an LXD edition. And actually, the Rat Poison edition was my own idea, and a friend actually talked me in creating that. I actually didn't think that we were going to have more than two right poisoning users worldwide, that include me and my friend who suggested that we should create that edition, but actually it has been a lot popular, so I was a lot of surprised with the reception of the right poisoning edition by the Linux crowd.
That's cool. Any plans to do an awesome edition? I got to ask that for Peter 64. I don't know if you guys know him, but he'll be upset with me if I don't ask.
I'll be honest, not really. But if someone comes along and wants to do all the work that's involved, there'll be really no problem in doing it.
So Peter 64 is welcome to help you guys. You even accept Australians on your project?
Of course. We actually have another Australian guy in our team.
Oh, very cool. So if people wanted to help out and contribute, where would they go? How would they get involved?
They could come at any of the communications channels we have, so they could just ask at the forum. They could come to our mail list, and of course there's also a Jabber room and an ISZ room. For Celix, all those are also pointed out on the front page of our homepage. We actually even have Celix Identical Group, and there's a Google Plus page.
And your homepage is it salixos.org, is that right, or is it .com?
No, it's .org.
Okay, salixos.org, and you can find everything through that. On IRC, are you guys on Freenode? Is that where it's at?
Yes, exactly. The channel is #Celix.
Okay, great. Now, I wanted to ask you quickly before we wrap up, the desktop environments that you guys make available, do you do a lot of customization to them, or are they pretty vanilla? Do you keep them the way that they are released by the projects, or do you do much customization to them?
Generally, regarding packages, we keep kind of to the rules of Slackware, so we try to provide packages as vanilla as possible and only do patches when there's good reason, because it's some important bug fix. So for the editions or for the desktop environments, it's quite similar. We don't start changing, let's say, the logout dialogues to customize them for our editions. But of course, we add some custom artwork, and we provide some sensible default configuration.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. And that artwork is just so beautiful on there. It's just such a pleasure to look at every time. Is there anything that that I should have asked you guys that you wanted to bring up that I haven't?
No, I don't think that, not really. But just that everyone is available to join and contribute in any way that he likes, even by trying out Celix and telling us their impressions. That would be helpful, even if someone doesn't know how to code or anything. Oh, another thing, we should actually mention that, is that we have a very nice user guide set up on our homepage. It's available as a PDF, and we have a documentation team that has worked hard, very hard, on creating that guide, and I think that it is written very, very nicely, and especially beginners should first read that guide. It's a few pages that actually introduces the user to what Celix is and what most of the basic system tools are and how they work. And it's written very nicely from our documentation team, and you can get it from our homepage. So anyone that hasn't used Celix and considers himself a beginner, more or less, he should actually first go and read that documentation. It's written very nicely, and it flows very, very nice. And I'd be very thankful for our documentation team for writing that up. And it's actually translated to a couple of languages by now. And that's another very nice thing that we have, being an international project that we are, having people from all around the world. It makes it very easy to have all our tools translated in a lot of languages. So every single one of our tools is available in English, French, German, Greek, Italian, Spanish, you name it, Japanese. We have everything, all our system tools, everything that we've written is available in lots and lots of languages. So many thanks go to our documentation team and to our translators who have contributed into Salix in any way possible.
Yeah, that's one of the greatest things about being alive today, is that we can communicate and work with people from all over the world and collaborate in such astonishing ways. It's something I have a deep appreciation for. It's really great to see that that's part of Salix as well. Andreas, did you have anything to add before we wrap up?
No, I wouldn't like to add much. I just say to sum it up, we're a really, truly international project, and every contributor is welcome, no matter where he's from. And there is really a lot to do, so you don't need to do the actual programming of applications, custom applications for Salix, but you can also do packaging. You can provide support on the boards or on the IRC and Jabber channels. You can do documentation, or you can translate documentations and applications, which is actually really not that hard. You just have to go on to our translation project, and then you can just translate.
Well, from an end user standpoint, I'm hearing you guys say, you know, how much work there is for people to do and available, but I got to say you've done a great job of making it look very complete. I have a real hard time finding anything missing from there, but I understand what you mean about translations needing to be done and adding packages and updating packages. That's, you know, of course, always something that needs to be done with any Linux distribution. So I have to end very shortly here because I have to go to work. But I want to thank you guys for taking the time out of your day to come on and talk with me about Salix. And I want to thank you for creating Salix and for all the great works that you guys and your team has done.
Thank you for having us, Patrick. It was great talking to you. Thanks a lot.
Oh, yeah, anytime.
Yes, thanks from me, too. Thanks for the interview. It was really nice.
Oh, yeah, anytime. Anytime you guys want. I mean, if you guys have, you know, announcements that you want to make or you know, want to come on and do another interview at your next release or anytime before then, you know, this is Hacker Public Radio. You can feel free to post those without me if you don't, you know, if you wanted to do them on your own. But if you wanted me to be involved, I'd love to. You know, I don't mind, you know, pimping Salix whenever I get the opportunity. Some, you know, the guys in the IRC can tell you how annoying I can be about it.
Okay, thanks. So I guess we look and come back to you.
Yeah, that would be great. I'd love to do a follow-up interview at some point.
That'd be great.
All right, so that's it for me today. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Hacker Public Radio. Please don't forget, we always need more shows, contributions from listeners just like you. So as demonstrated here by Andreas Born and George Flahavis, anybody can do Hacker Public Radio. Anybody can get involved in free and open source software. And as demonstrated by me, anybody can use Salix. Give it a try.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All BinRev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.